Guys, did you watch that championship game for the men's? Wow. Complete, utter wow. Like, what the hell happened? What was bigger, Houston blowing that game or Duke blowing the game against Houston? A lot of blowing going on this weekend. Speaking of blowing, the women's tournament, it was all blowouts. It was amazing. I love it when my team is beating the crap out of the other team. It's not so much fun when it's happening, like my Lakers being the crap out of the Thunder. Aaron said it wasn't a big deal. Wanted to shut me up, but man, that was a clinic. There was a lot of clinics this weekend for basketball. So Houston letting it slip. Kevin Sampson, like, oh my God. So close, but no cigar. Three times and twice to the youngest coach in college basketball. That's tough. We talk a little F1. Was it a snooze fest? Not a lot of excitement in the NBA. In the West, it's super tight. I think it's the first time in NBA history that you have, what is it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 6 teams basically tied with the same record. I think Denver just half a game up, but they're all tied with the same record with 4 games left. Like, anything can happen. The Lakers can technically drop down to the 8th seed. They could technically go up to the 2nd seed, but Houston got that thing locked up at number 2. I would like to think my Lakers got it locked up at number 3. Austin Reaves, man, what a baller. And then we talk about, well, the guys, they're really hyped up on the Chicago Bulls for some reason, creeping up to the 9th seed. So go figure. But then we talk about Vladdy Jr. getting that $500 million contract. But for 15 years or 14 years, that's a long, long time. I know he's 26, but that's a long, long time. I really don't know why baseball ever does these contracts. It makes no sense whatsoever. I think, like, maybe A-Rod, maybe he's the only one that actually performed all the way through the end of the contract. Am I wrong? We got a lot to cover. Don't go anywhere. Big podcast, big weekend today. We're recording Monday night after the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship game, where Florida came out of nowhere, came back from 12 points down. Houston gave that away. Houston gave it away. You should have seen Samson's face at the end of the game. I felt bad for the guy. Florida wins 65-63. They claim their third basketball championship in the last 20 years. I think UConn might be the only other team to do that for basketball. And then I was reading a stat somewhere along the lines. Todd Golden, Aaron, your guy, youngest to win a natty since Jim Valvano. Todd Golden's just 39 years old.
Who ironically beat Houston in the national title game back in 1983.
That's, I mean,
if you actually think about Houston's national title game losses, is there any two ways to lose more heartbreaking times? 83 and now in 25. I mean, a half court heave that hits in an out, basically alley oop, and then a shot you don't get off. You can't touch the ball because it would have been traveling, but it probably would have been better to do it traveling because at least there's like 3 or 4 seconds on the clock you can foul and play the long out game, maybe. Crazy, man. I mean, if I'm a Houston fan, wow. I mean,
those guys are balling right away.
Jim Nantz, hello, friends. Hello. I mean, that's all I can say.
It was a wild game. It was really good. I got to say, it started off a little rough. Houston was 0-for-8 for three-point land. Houston was the best three-point shooting team in college basketball and also the number one ranked defense as well. Every team in the Final Four was ranked in the top 10 for defense and offense. First time that that's happened in a very, very long time. It's a rarity. So this Final Four was a rare species of its own. And we were presented with some real games. First, let's recap the championship game because it's fresh. It just happened just minutes ago. And then we'll go back to what happened in the Final Four because those were some great games too. Where do we start here, actually? It was pretty close. I would say it felt like Houston had pretty good control up until about, I want to say, like the 7-minute mark. Or maybe it was 12 minutes ago. So they were up by 11, 45-34.
Yeah.
34, 12 minutes to go. Then Florida hits like this tough three. Then they rejected Houston on this three-point shot and then did like a fast court break. And they converted for an at-one. Basically, that ended up being an 8-0 run. So they were only down by 4 points, 4 points with about like 11, 10 minutes to go. They end up being tied shortly after at 48 apiece with 7. And then Florida gets teed up for bouncing the ball off the court, you know, losing composure a little bit. Houston just seemed to answer at the right times with either a 3-point shot or like just driving to the basket and, you know, hitting clutch free throws. It went back and forth. They go up by 3. Florida catches up. They go up by 3. Florida catches up. They were tied 60 with 3 minutes to go. And then I think they were up by 63-60. Florida converts on a few foul shots, a few drives. Clayton, I think, hits a big time 3 at the end as well. And then Houston has some costly turnovers. They look like they just didn't know what to do with the ball, even though I think they only had one timeout left with 8 minutes to go. They spent everything in the first half of that second half. So tough loss.
Yeah, I mean, you only get 4 timeouts in a collegiate game because you get the media timeout every 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and they burned a timeout, I think, midway through the second quarter on the offensive rebound. The guy was falling out of bounds. So rather than lose that possession, they burned a timeout. So, Rome, like you said, they were down to 1 timeout like 8 minutes to go. Florida had like 3 left. They burned a couple themselves. But, yeah, I mean, Houston was in control, like you mentioned, up 45-34. But Florida, we've seen it throughout this tournament. They've come back down close to double digits, or double digits, a number of times, and it's with the 3-ball, right? They hit a couple threes. They get momentum going their way. And Houston, we talked about it all tournament. They're a great defensive team. But if you look at the scores in a lot of their games, their offense has always been the question mark. I mean, they destroyed Tennessee, but they didn't light up the scoreboard there. Purdue, they beat, similar to how they kind of lost today, last second inbounds play. They won, what, 64-62. And then Duke, they caught lightning in a bottle, went on a 9-0 run with 33 seconds of remaining in that game to pull off the upset there. I know we weren't, Jason wasn't on yet. We're talking about it off air, but I mean, Duke's got to be shaking their head because I think they would have beaten Florida pretty handily tonight. But, you know, credit to Houston, the fight they have. I know you touched on it. Todd Golden, 39 years old, our age, winning his first national title. He's from your area, neck of the woods there, Rome, coming from San Francisco, the Dons University, where he coached there, got them back to relevance, and now goes to Florida. He also played at St. Mary's with the Gales there. So he's had a lot of background here. Give him credit, and then I feel bad for Kevin Sampson. I mean, you talk about a coach that has won everywhere he's gone, Oklahoma, Indiana, now Houston. He had some trouble back in the day before NIL became a thing and got the 5-year no-show cause by the NCAA. Ironically, went to work with Popovich and the Spurs, part of a couple of their titles there. And then the Final Four in his own backyard in San Antonio. I feel bad for him, man. I feel bad for the Houston program.
Especially how the game ended. Just... I don't know if there's a lot of golden rules to end the game, especially when you have the amount of time that Houston have, but not getting a shot off is just, I mean, it's almost unforgivable. You're not giving yourself a chance. And that's like it's just terrible. I mean, I forgot which player had the 3-point attempt where he kind of pump faked himself out of the ball and then could touch the ball.
Just throw it up.
So
two turnovers back to back on him. Remember the play before that, it was dribbled off his knee. So he looks a little back rattled. Back-to-back turnovers. That's real tough, man.
Yeah.
And I know last week we were talking just about Clayton's importance. I think, and that was in the national semifinal game. We were talking about that. But as much as he was important in this game, the offensive end, really his closeout at the end of the game defensively really was, you know, as important as anything that entire game of just not letting them get that 3-point shot off. So it was crazy to me, kind of to the ending sequence of the game. I'll say the beginning of the game, I didn't get to see the start of the game. I'll be honest with you. I got a text from a friend in a little group chat I got, and this was text that said, "My God, they've been shooting fucking bricks. Houston is literally shooting like Zinke, which means they're just shooting it off the backboard because you know generally in my prime, man, you know they." Why the hell have the backboard if you don't use it? And that was like me, you know, I was younger, you know, you hit the square, let it go in. So apparently Houston in the first half was doing this. I don't know. You guys would have to confirm that for me, but I was getting
a breakfast at the beginning.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, No shame to the guys, man. You that square's back there for a reason. That's what they invented the game for you to bank it in. So
I've never seen you play basketball, so this is the first thing I ever heard of. So
I think we just got a good impression, yeah. And it sounds like it's a brick fest. Hey, where you better put some Windex on that backboard because it's gonna be stained up.
All I knew back in the day, you know, when I'm playing street ball at my house with my friends, next door neighbors, you know, you don't get those nice like shiny glass backboards. You got a hard carbon fiber, so you can slam that thing up against it, and it just deadens the ball and then yeah. goes down in. So just a little key to knowing your game and. You know, so that's how I play.
I'm curious, Jason, what hand do you shoot with? Are you right-handed or left-handed when you shoot?
I actually shoot right-handed.
Oh, okay.
Which I think we've talked about this before. Right-left-handed. I'm left-handed.
And you throw the baseball with or football with the other hand, right?
I throw a football with my right hand, but a baseball with the left hand. Okay. But I shoot a basketball right-handed, too.
Okay. So. It gets confusing tracking all these hands.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Just depends, you know? If I was a little more athletic, I could be like one of these pitchers throwing with both arms and doing both things, you know. But
I know. Wouldn't even need a reliever. You go 5 innings with the right and then 4 of the left.
Maybe he does do that.
Hey, I'll tell you this. He's not going 9 innings if he's on the old blue shoe there.
Jason had a hard time getting on. That's what we're making fun of, guys.
Just computer had some performance issues, you know? Yeah. It happens.
You gotta close those tablets up there. Yeah.
Those little tabs, yeah. Well, speaking of which, it was a hell of a game. Let's go back to the Final Four. Gators got here because they edged out Auburn, which I thought Auburn should have won that game, and they kind of flubbed in the end of that, especially in that second half. And then we all saw the Duke-Houston game. Duke was up, I think, like six points with like 30 seconds to go. You know, the probability was like at 98%. Still, you know, it was like a weird foul called on flag with like 20 seconds to go.
Yeah, that was a bad call.
That guy was ready to – that ref was ready to blow it. I'm like, that's kind of fishy.
That was a terrible call.
I'm like, whatever. You know, there was other things, other elements happening, but I, you know, you always want to believe that your team has a chance to still win the game. 6 points, 30 seconds ago, you know, it's a possibility, but you would think like the other team might like try to dribbling it out. Duke didn't. And then, you know, we all know how that happened, you know, not a good ending. They really, I think, choked that game away. But yeah. As much as they choked it, Houston has a history of playing tough defense and edging out these wins. Real quick, as we talk about Duke, I have a cool little stat for you guys. If I can pull it up right here. I think my phone's acting really stupid.
It's a lot of electronic problems tonight.
There is. Dude, what happened to it?
He gave my computer so much crap for, you know, their performance issues, but his phone not working. So.
Dude, I did screenshots. Something's up. Oh, man.
Yeah, but let's touch back on Rome. Like you said, I mean, Duke was up, what, 6 there with 33 seconds remaining basically in the game. I mean, the problem with Duke, they haven't been tested. We talked about it all year, really. I mean, they've been blowing people out in the ACC, a conference typically that's been the standard in college hoops. The ACC has been one of the best, if not the premier conference for the last 2 decades, really. And this year, just outside of Duke, another team didn't win a game in the tournament. You know, Clemson got upset early. North Carolina played in the play-in tournament. They got a victory there, but Ole Miss ended up beating them in round 1. But Duke really didn't have a true point guard to withstand that pressure. You know, they just, no. I mean, a lot of times they use Cooper Flagg, 6'9", as a point guard, and they pressured him. They trapped him. They had no one to really dribble out, get out of those pressures, and Houston forced some turnovers, got back in the game. You mentioned that Cooper Flagg foul. That wasn't a foul. Sent Houston to the line to shoot 2 shots, and then they go on. Cooper Flagg misses a good look there at the end. I mean, I don't really question the shot there. I thought it was a good sequence. He got where he wanted. He got to the spot, missed it. But, yeah, Houston, give him credit for that victory, but, you know, they found a way to choke this one against Florida.
Yeah, I would say – you know, you're not going to make them all, but I think that was really the end of that sequence of the game with Duke and Houston for Cooper Flagg. Like, that was kind of his moment at that, to have one of those March Madness, like, legacy kind of making moments there. At the, I mean, I thought it was like, oh, this is going to be his time. This is going to go in. And when it just, I mean, I wouldn't say it wasn't close, but I mean, it really wasn't even that close. And so that was kind of disappointing from Duke. We're a team that, I know I did, and I think Aaron and a bunch of other people thought this was the team to beat kind of in the tournament, at least get into the title game versus Florida. So, yeah, just some weird end-of-game stuff between that game and then what Houston did in this game, where you're just kind of expecting a little, you know, some better things from some late-game heroics that are going to come down to, you know, ultimately nothing, especially, I mean, Houston's obviously taking the cake with not getting a shot off in this title game.
It was rough. I think the style I was looking for was Duke, man. They were about four possessions away from having a perfect season. So all four losses, including in the last game against Houston, they lost by one possession within 15 seconds. They were within one possession of, with 15 seconds left in every single game. They were that close.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on it too, Rome. Duke, like we said, they've been blowing everybody out. But all their losses, if I'm not mistaken, were against teams that defensively were in the top 25 in the nation.
Yeah.
And obviously Houston's one of the top, if not the top team defensively. And we question whether you've be able to hold up and withstand the pressure that Houston just constantly brings. Constantly. Duke's
they
not
did
deep.
Not stop.
They only
did
play
not stop.
Like really seven deep. They're all led by mainly freshmen, and then they got like a graduate player and then another senior. But
I think that's what happened. They just had a lot of freshmen that's never really been there.
And they don't have a true point guard. They don't have that true like point guard guy that can set it up and get things going. I mean, you look back at the traditional Duke teams, they had, we all know, Jay Williams. He was one of the best premier guards in the game back in the day. Chris Duhon, a famous Duke player as well. So they've had a lot of premier guards. And this team was kind of just like, I want to say they were the tallest and most lankiest team height-wise.
They were,
like,
they had a lot of length.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I mean, just.
That's something that you're, so I was watching the games with Aaron's parents. I was in.
I saw the photo there,
which was really cool.
You watched both games or just the one?
I watched at least the first half of the Duke Houston. No, yeah, the first half of the Duke Houston game at your parents' house. Then we took off. My daughter was ready to go get ice cream, and you know, we watched enough basketball, but a lot of fun. That's something that your dad did mention. Like, damn, Duke's really tall. And it's pretty crazy that they're here just like 3 years after Coach K. I don't know what could have been, man. What could have been? I did hear, or I have heard like some rumors where it would be nice if Flagg stayed for another year. This is something that Jason talked about a few weeks ago, and it's like, nah, that's not happening. And so, you know, different people have been positioning whether he did or not, you know, if he did. But if he stays one more year, he's more than likely not going to be like the number one consensus, because next year is also a pretty deep, a deep draft class. This year, he's definitely the number one consensus. So it makes more sense to leave this year. But, you know, that what if, like, what if he pulls like a Paige Beckers, right? Like, what if he wants to come back and get that title? But then there's also those scenarios like, you never know what happens, right? You can bust your ACL, lots of injuries. You know, basketball is weird, you know, especially in college basketball. Lots of injuries happen in college basketball. So, you know, do you stay to try to win a title? You got the Boozer Boys coming up. One's ranked number 3 in the country. The other one's ranked number 17 or something like that. Both top 20. You know, that's a tough decision, but he has a month to decide whether he stays or whether he goes.
Yeah, I know I floated it the last time around about him staying, and I think there's could be arguments, and people will talk through a ton about NIL and all this type of stuff. I don't buy into it, especially for a caliber player that high. If you are the, like, you know, starting outside linebacker for whatever SEC school and you get an NIL money, okay, yeah, that's a little bit different. But NBA, the incentive for the one and done and get to the NBA as soon as possible because of just the amount of money in the NBA versus some of the other sports makes it, I don't care what kind of NIL money you're talking through, you get into the league at the NBA level, you're getting to the big max contract even faster.
Yeah.
So you delaying that a year, these guys right now, like, I don't know how old Jimmy Butler is right now, but like, you look at a player like this, kind of Jimmy Butler's age, maybe it's like mid 30s or something like that. These guys are chasing this, like, yeah, you guys are chasing this like last big contract. And the longer you wait, the kind of, you know, longer you're putting out when you get to this, you know, mid 30s type deal that you're potentially out there, that's a significant amount of money that you're holding off for a year versus like, okay, whatever NIL money you're getting in college, whatever car dealership's giving you a sponsor, great. There's some national dealership or some big market, you know, that's going to sponsor you as well too, that's going to make up for the money. So I think you're really playing for some sort of college experience or whatever it might be. Like some people, like, you know, some people truly the money doesn't matter to them. A lot of the times I think there's been like,
I love that.
You know, I mean, even think of like kids, I'm trying to think of a good example, but like, you know, some like second generation like player that's out there, can't think of a good example, but okay, you came from a sports family with legacy money. Okay, I'm not worried kind of about that. You could take that time, but others, hey, it's about to get right away and start getting paid, because as the career stacks up, especially with the NBA's concern for the massive TV deal they signed for the next decade, the cap's going to be keep getting bigger. These max contracts are even bigger. You want to go. Like, what are you doing saving your time here at Duke, especially if you said your value could potentially go down just on the rookie deal alone?
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense for him to go back to Duke. I mean, even if he got an NIL deal worth, what, $5-6 million?
I don't think it's about the money. I think it's more about the history making.
He got to the Final Four. I mean, he had a chance to win the game. You couldn't ask for any more if you're Cooper Flagg. Like, I'll tell you this, growing up as a kid playing basketball, you counted down that moment in your life every day if you played basketball and you dreamt about playing college hoops or NBA where the game is on the line and you put a shot up in the backyard. Like, we've all done it. It was there. He was living the moment that he's been dreaming about forever, and he came up short. Now it's time to take his game to the league. I think he's ready for the NBA. He's the best freshman I've seen since Carmelo Anthony. And that's what, you know, talking 20 years. So
I'm glad Aaron brought up Carmelo Anthony, because like, to me, I think he's the perfect comp for like, during that time we're growing up, that draft was loaded. It was LeBron, Melo, Bosh, Wade, Darko.
You had Kirk Heinrich too. I think he was like fifth or sixth.
But you had this loaded draft. Melo has the college moment, wins the title with Syracuse, like, you know, goes on the Cinderella run, most dominant player out there. But the entire discourse of the last like 15, 20 years about Carmelo Anthony was that he couldn't win the NBA title. And nobody even talks about what he did in college, or even, you know, kind of gives his flowers on the Olympic team. But his entire legacy is like, could have won the NBA title, didn't really get anything for the Knicks. So anyone could talk about all this crap about getting your moment in college, but you've proven, and Melo's a perfect example, no one remembers and no one cares. It's going to be like, if you get to the league and win the title. I'm saying I do. Like, Melo was the best. I mean, him and McNamara on that team, that was the best.
Was the key why they won. McNamara was 6 threes in that title game.
Valid point, Jason.
Yeah, it's just thinking about it. Like, for Melo personally, hey, that's probably a moment list for him ever. You know, LeBron and all these other dudes, like, they can't talk, you know, Wade and Bosh, whoever in college, like, they can't talk to that. But, like, for his legacy personally, when you get to the basketball time, like, the college stuff, man, just, it doesn't sit. It'll be a resume kind of cherry on top for some people. You know, for Jordan, that could be the thing. Like, he won the national title at North Carolina and the 6 championships. But if you don't have it on the resume, nobody really remembers.
I think Melo's problem is our expectations were too high. I mean, Jason brought up a great point about Melo.
I don't think so.
But no one talks about Christian Laettner's NBA career because it's all about that shot in college. So it can go both ways depending on the guy. I thought, you know, problem with Melo is, you know, he never got to an NBA finals. He never got the Knicks anywhere. He got to a Western Conference finals with the Nuggets. They got beat by, obviously, Kobe and stuff. But, you know, he had a great NBA career. He's the first ballot NBA Hall of Famer.
What's it like?
I remember Carmelo more for what he did at Syracuse the freshman year than his NBA, just because, off Jason mentioned, he didn't get to the finals or ever was like really that true leader, that like an Iverson. Iverson still carried the Sixers to an NBA title. No one expected him ever to beat Shaq and Kobe in the finals, but he got there. Carmelo didn't even get that far. Well, so, but, almost. You know, Christian Laettner still living off a shot he made in, what, 91, 92.
Well, I think part of it.
And it's declared the greatest college basketball player maybe of all time because of that tournament run.
I think part of it is because he's probably the last great white basketball player. I think that's why he's kind of like still infamous right now. Cooper Flagg, though, this is the next Larry Bird. This is the big white hope. This is Eminem. This is Jim Carrey, you know? He's hanging out with all the brothers and doing it better than them. Like, that's why he's a big deal. He could, you know, people are already debating how many MVPs is he going to win. Is it over or under 1.5? It's pretty wild. Like, Cooper Flagg's that good.
Cooper Flagg's really good.
He's
but
that
where's
good.
He, where's he going to go? Is he going to end up in Washington? He going to end up in Charlotte?
I think every team is like...
Every team's tanking now for him.
It is.
There's no secret.
Washington's probably like the worst team I can think of. Everybody else has like something working for them. At least.
You know he's probably going to go to the Spurs or something like that, right?
No, piss me off, dude. Don't say stuff like that.
I've heard the Spurs
frozen envelope
tied
too.
Remember, they had Robinson and then they got Duncan. Yeah. So now you get now
sat out the whole year. It's a legitimate conspiracy theory.
And hey, where did he lose the Final Four at? San Antonio. Makes sense to go back.
By the way,
a lot of sense.
Aaron, you know what your dad said about you?
What did he say?
He said, Aaron's built different. This guy's all in on conspiracy theories.
And I just started laughing. I'm like, you're absolutely right, dude.
Hey,
man. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with that guy. That guy's all about conspiracy theories. He's just like,
Was he drinking an IPA or was he drinking a whiskey?
He was drinking some IPAs, and then I brought over some IPAs from a brewery. By the way, I've never actually checked out Ventura, man. Great drinking scene, good food scene. It's really
great,
awesome,
dude. It's great.
I even looked at some apartments actually down there. I was just like, it's really beautiful. It's nice.
Well, yeah, we'd give you about halfway between coming down to visit us in San Francisco if you just moved to Ventura.
I would just build out a studio and just have you guys come out once a month.
The Ventura Studios? There we
Ventura
go.
Ventura Studio.
There you go, man.
Not like the Carpinteria or...
Carpinteria is really cool. Yeah.
It's a really cool spot. Yeah. Cool downtown. Yeah. I was blown away, dude. I know
G used to like to hang out down there a lot.
It gets sketchy in Ventura really quickly.
He would smoke a cigar. He liked to hang out down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can see why. It's a new batch of talent down there. It's a lot to look forward to in Ventura. I don't know. I really like
that. Hey, make sure you take a blue chew with you next time you're down there.
I guess we're going to have to go to the Chili's in Ventura if we want to see him again now for our next dinner.
Yeah, oh, that'd be great. I would love that. all right, let's talk about the women's championship real quick.
I know Jason had it, UConn winning it, so he was right on that one.
I believe that UConn defeating South Carolina was the final I predicted. So.
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, so women's Final Four, less exciting than the men's. These were fucking blowouts.
Before you get into it, Rome, I just got to ask, did you and your daughter watch it, and what was her comment on the game?
We didn't get a chance to watch the games because when I checked on it, it was like I was going to make an effort for us to go to like a restaurant or like a bar to go watch it, and it was just over. South Carolina was already up by like 20 or so points when I checked the score, and it was like actually – Texas was up in the first quarter. They were up by like 7 or so, and then they were even after the second quarter. And then the third quarter is when South Carolina blew it up, and then they never turned around. 74-57 destroyed a really good Texas team. UCLA, one of the best teams in the country this year. They beat all the good teams, even UConn early in the year, USC, everybody, South Carolina. They got fucking worked by UConn. Like, UConn was on a mission. Like, this game was over after the first quarter. Paige Beckers, the whole squad, they have two freshmen that are balling their ass out, which one girl, she might be the next, basketball phenom since what's her face? You know, Juju's out. This girl's got serious game. She won MVP for UConn in the championship game. She scored 20-something points. But, man, they were really phenomenal. I really felt bad for my UCLA team because I'm like, that's UCLA. You know,
yeah, they got destroyed.
They got destroyed. 34 points, 85-51.
And you said they beat him in the regular season?
Dude, UCLA was
They were good.
Unstoppable for a large part of the season. They only had a couple of tough losses. And then UConn, I did catch the second half of it, but it was already, you know, locked up. My daughter didn't watch too much of it. UConn just outballed South Carolina, but they have legitimate stars. I don't think South Carolina actually, like, they're a good team, but I just don't think they have anybody like Paige on their squad. So it was just a no contest. It was pretty amazing. And Gene, we were talking about this in the last pod, 11 championships in 20 years or whatever it is. No, or 30 years, because he hasn't won since, what, 2016?
It's been like 10 years since his last one, right? 2016, man. I think, was his last one. Now he's got 12. He's got a dozen.
Yeah, so for whoever does know about Paige, she was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark. She was really hot, hyped up coming out of high school. Got recruited to go to UConn to kind of end that drought. Had a killer freshman year, but had some injuries. They bowed out.
She had an ACL tear, right?
Speaking of second stars. Year. Yes, yeah. She did. She had two injuries, actually, her second year. I can't remember what the first one was, but it kept her out for half the season. Then 4 weeks later, she tears her ACL. She came back a little early. That ruined that whole year. Well, that also took out her junior year. And so basically her senior year was basically a bounce back. That was last year. But you have Caitlin Clark, you have Angel Reese, you have a lot of people that have been, like, you know, building up for 3 years. They get bounced out in the Final Four. Just barely missed out by 2 points to Iowa, I think, in the Final Four. And then they come back this year and she finally gets her flowers. But it's been like a long redemption story for Paige. So, like, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, the you spoke about a bunch of different names in that. You know, Paige was with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Camila Cardoza, and a few others. Cameron Brink, all in like a same recruiting class.
Cameron Brink, yeah.
Like, it's just like, that was probably
a loaded class.
It might be the most loaded women's high school recruiting class ever. That came in like 2020 or whatever it was. So, yeah, just insane. I mean, she kind of had been, like you said, had the injuries and just hadn't had that big moment. Caitlin Clark dominated the social media and these entire narrative around the tournament for her to finally get the championship. And now that kind of the stage was all for Paige Beckers to herself in this time, like, really rose to the occasion. Just a, you know, an overall dominant effort by UConn just the whole way, almost the whole way through. But the Final Four, really, for how they basically blew out two teams, really just made this like not even competitive here. You know, I know someone texted me like, okay, this is boring. Just blowout city. They were a UCLA fan during the first one. But yeah, I mean, just a dominant performance, and, you know, really sets up. I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, come around and say I'm a WNBA fan, but like the amount of star power that like WNBA kind of has right now.
I'll be getting a lot. It's next 2-3 classes. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. And I know people like, you know, moderately. WNBA is a far off from what the NBA is. You can't make an apples to apples comparison, but when you consider, you know, you're in like the 25th year, whatever the WNBA is kind of celebrating right now. And they're kind of having their moment, you know, pre breakout for the, you know, NBA, where, like, you know, you imagine like late 70s, early 80s, when, you know, Magic and Bird were kind of getting their run, where the NBA finals was on like tape delay and like no one cared about it. You know, now, I mean, WNBA is, did they get the kind of the summer to themselves to a degree, and kind of a, you know, footballish free during time to, you know, baseball doesn't really dominate the headlines, you know, so you're going to get some interest in these games, and it becomes one of the popular things that you can watch. And now you got a bunch of stars that people are going to want to see. You know, it'll be sick, because at least, I mean, what you can say for the WNBA is at least they don't do a ton of load management like their male counterparts do in the NBA, where you're not guaranteed to see the stars. You know, WNBA, for the most part, you're going to come out and see the stars, and they're going to be playing.
Yeah, and like you guys said, a lot more stars coming in, and they're expanding teams. So you got, what, one team, I think, coming this year, and then another one like the following year, if I'm not mistaken. So the WNBA right now, the ratings are up. They got good players. I mean, the college game for even the women's side is getting, you know, a lot of love. It's been really competitive this season. I mean, obviously UConn just went on a run that just dominated. It would have been interesting to see what happened. You know, there's a lot of people that said if Juju hadn't got hurt, they would have beat UConn or something. I don't think so. I think UConn was just that good. They were on a mission.
Destined.
They were just going to get it done. But yeah, I mean, the WNBA game, like Jason just said, I mean, it starts the draft's pretty soon. It happens pretty quickly. They start up, I want to say, in May, the WNBA season.
It's quick, too. They have
so
no
they,
vacation
they have
time.
May, June, July, and all that. Because, I mean, baseball's going, but baseball really doesn't start getting going hot again until late August, September, when it's that final month for the playoff stretch.
Speak
and then
yourself,
football
brother.
Camp stuff.
It's already so. Hot.
What was that?
Baseball?
Yeah, it's already hot, baby.
Oh, no, baseball's over. The White Sox lost like 5 or 6 straight.
Well, the Dodgers, the Dodgers have lost 3 out of 4. So, I mean, yeah, it's, at least there's a pulse in the game still.
This guy.
Blake Snell's already hurt. So, I mean, I see the writing on the wall for the Dodgers right now. Doesn't look great.
This guy's hating 24/7. The Player Haters Hall of Fame nominee, class 25, Aaron Toler.
Aaron's built different, all right?
I've been saying that for 40 years almost. I'm glad my dad finally acknowledged it. I'm going to have to buy him a beer next time I see him.
Dude, that was the biggest. Oh, man, I was laughing. And your mom was like, what? What are you talking about, Gary? It's like, what?
I'll say this. My mom's always had my back. She's always had it. No doubt about it.
It's true, man. When you say he's built different, I mean, we all kind of look like our parents. But Aaron's literally built like his dad. So I don't know what you're talking about right here.
Not as stocky.
No, that's true.
You're thin like your mom. Yeah.
My sister's built stocky like my dad. Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, a little F1, a little NBA updates. We'll see if our guest actually shows up today.
NHL.
Nick, wherever you are.
Oh, Ovechkin, yeah. NHL,
Ovechkin.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that, too. Time to talk a little F1. The Japanese Grand Prix was this past Saturday at 10 p.m. It was actually a really nice time. Got back to the hotel, had a beer all chilled up, some popcorn, had another TV. Dude, the TV at the hotel was really huge, man. It was awesome. It was the first hotel that had like a 70-inch screen.
Did you get the popcorn? Did you take it from my parents' place or what? I know. I saw that there's popcorn there last time I was there.
I should have. Nah, you know. If we were like in a more relaxed setting, I would have definitely took some snacks. But went to the liquor store, got some juices, some juice box for the daughter and I, and a little bag of popcorn. But basically, wasn't too much action. Some drama again at the pit stops with Lando Norris. Seems like they follow him every single race. There's always some drama with the pit stop. This time he was coming out maybe allegedly a little too early, or it was a really efficient pit stop, and then it was at the same time when Verstappen was coming out and they're side by side and he gets ran off to the grass, however you want to put it. That's how I saw it. Well, he kind of ran himself off a little bit.
It was a game of chicken, and Norris lost. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, he lost. First, you know, I will say I am the one who champions F1. I think I could say that I probably influenced you guys, you know, to be fans of the sport. We've talked a little more about the pod this year. Listeners seem to enjoy the F1 talk.
Highest
rated segment. Talk about Formula One. But let's be honest with you, that race freaking sucked. It was boring as hell. So
I agree.
It was pretty bad. There nothing really happened. If you ask Oscar Piastri in the cool down room, I don't know if you guys watched that. It was some of my favorite part of the year. They'll get the podium inside the cool down room.
I passed out in the last lap.
No, you didn't miss anything.
After Verstappen won, he got out and kind of did like I basically turned the TV off and went to bed. I was falling asleep after that, kind of like you mentioned, a little bit boring of a race.
I was not. I like the pomp and circumstance of Formula One. So, you know, the drivers, after they get their little interview, they go into a cool down room. So they get this big old TV and, you know, they're kind of just shooting at the hip. Sometimes they're super interested, sometimes they're not. They show the highlights on a big old TV inside that room. And these highlights ran for probably about 15 seconds. And Oscar Piastri's like, that's it? That's all that happened in the race? And Lando Norris is like, yeah, nobody passed each other. And so, like, even those guys are shitting on just, like, how overall uneventful the kind of race was. I mean, in the top 10, I think you only had one significant pass, and it was Lewis Hamilton passing Oscar Hasler, like, early in the race. And then there was some little passing here on the cars towards the end of the grid, but just nothing of significance the entire race. I think the only moment highlight you talked about for this race, Rome, was the pit stop. And the whole reason it happened was because Red Bull was a second slower in their pit stop versus McLaren. So when Lando released from the box, he was basically right next to Verstappen. And as they're exiting, it basically narrows down to one lane. And yeah, it was chicken. He went straight off the road, but it should have been Lando getting up behind him. The biggest question for me, though, is why the hell was Lando even pitting with Verstappen? Again, like strategy from McLaren. Oh, they did. Again, for strategy for McLaren, they did it a couple times last year. You know, generally, you don't want to, like, off-cycle pit. There's always something. We talked about tire, how many times pit stops are going to make. I think we were kind of way off on that, talking about two pit stops. These guys at this point are now just going to do one pit stop per race because we're going to make the tires last.
Yeah, I think only one team did two because they started with soft two guys, and then they came in like their 8-10 laps and then changed, and then probably changed again to the hard at the end, but I don't remember what two guys
it was.
Which
is interesting. A lot of guys switched to soft. Like already 20 laps in, I was like, "Oh, okay."
No, they didn't. It was mediums and
medium,
hards.
Medium to hards. Hamilton started with the hards.
He did, which just gives you the longer run. It was Lance Stroll who started with the softs, and you're right. He finished last, I think. Yeah. So the strategy did not pay off. It wasn't buying you the time. But what they learned throughout the races is like Kimi Antonelli ran the mediums, and he did like a super long run. He was the last car to stop on there for Mercedes, and so going back to like the McLaren side of things, you saw there was no tire degradation or time gap that was happening up on kind of where things are at. The biggest like contention in this race was you couldn't pass anyone because you lost speed the closer you got to the person in front of you. So you needed the clean air. And that was part of Max being kind of so dominant, is just he had the clean air the whole time. Right now, the way these cars are all set up, that we've kind of maxed out some of the upgrades and everything is, once you get near some of these cars, you get the dirty air. You're just not affected. You don't have that speed before any sort of the passing turns to be able to get enough momentum to get past. So like, why McLaren didn't have Lando stay out, get the fresh air, run some faster laps in the open air instead of just relying on, okay, maybe Red Bull botches the pit stop, which they kind of did, but you would have need them like a 2-3 second botch on the pit stop versus, hey, 1 second to get it by. And this Lando just never stood a chance to get by. He never could get within 1 second to get the DRS. He was always between 1.1 and like 1.5 seconds away from Max. Oscar was kind of coming back and forth. Lando was probably trying to preserve some of the tires to a degree to mount a challenge at the end, but just overall it was a pretty boring race. There was nothing eventful happening. We're just waiting for a move to happen that never did. It got to the point where was Lando just really comfortable finishing in second and was going to take the points where it's at, because there's such a history of him and Max and, you know, Lando not being as aggressive when it comes to that turn. Is he going to sacrifice potentially like causing a wreck and losing out at any points, rather just taking, hey, I'm going to take the 18 second place points, move on with the day and continue to go. I'll still be first in the driver standings. That's a strategy, just staying at the top and being competitive and scoring points in every race. Like, that's how you can, you know, really win the championship. If you look at back in the late 80s, early 90s for Alan Prost, who ran for McLaren, kind of known as the professor, he didn't care about winning every race. He was about maximizing as many points. If the car didn't have it, it didn't have it, and he didn't push it. And so there was some argument. It was Lando kind of doing that too, because the race really was won on the, I guess that would have been Friday night for qualifying. Max putting in the qualifying time that nobody expected right at the last second was really what won the race, because we kind of talked about
us.
Yeah. I mean, we thought McLaren had the car, but I mean, this is true. You know, as much as even people like me who are the Lewis Hamilton stands, who just think, you know, Lewis is the greatest of all time, I still think he is. Verstappen just is an unreal talent that could put him in the conversation of greatest of all time. When you look at a guy who can maximize a car that is not the fastest in the field, it's maybe the third or fourth fastest car, the Red Bull, but he knows how to get the most out of that car and put in a lap time in qualifying that makes a competitor where it doesn't matter that he isn't the fastest and going to win a race.
Well, they were talking about in the race, I think it was like 10 to go, they made it public where Piastri was asking if it was okay to take over Norris because he felt like he could catch up Verstappen.
Yeah, but
then they were saying that Norris wanted to keep it because he said he was asking if he was saving his tires, and he's like, no, he's going full throttle keeping up, and they kept it as is. So it was kind of weird, like he couldn't get it closer. I think it was like 0.7 seconds behind Verstappen. It was after that.
Yeah, I think he got what, 0.4 seconds, then it went to like 1.2, 1.3, and then they just kind of died off there.
I really
Piastri is pretty upset about that, apparently.
Yeah, but I didn't really buy Piastri had the car to get by Norris either, because every time he got closer to Norris, the same things was happening where he wasn't going to have enough car to overtake, and it was going to be the same. Like, his car wasn't any better. Those guys have that kind of unspoken but kind of spoken rivalry dating back to last year between the teammates on, like, who kind of the number one driver is, because they won't say, but Norris has been there longer. He's the one that's supposed to take this step. But Piastri, if you ask the people within F1, they think Piastri is probably the better driver and is probably going to be the one that maybe wins more world championships, because he's kind of got that.
Honestly, I do too. And I've been watching for maybe five total races. I think Piastri is a better racer than Norris.
Yeah. If you, we had our guest on talking Formula One before the season started. And we're talking about the Drive to Survive. And one thing that clicked in Drive to Survive, they were highlighting the feud last year between Lando and Piastri, and they asked Christian Horner, who's the team principal and CEO of Red Bull Racing, of like, if you could have one of the drivers, who would you want? And he said Piastri. And so that, I think that is very much spoken, where he's got the more aggressive tendency that could be the driver, where Lando, hey, happy guy, competitive, great driver. But like, the questions will always be about Lando. Does he have this kind of killer instinct where it could be at? Or, yeah, he could win the championship, maybe two. But Piastri's kind of built differently, almost like a Verstappen type that, hey, he wants to win, and I'm coming out this track to win, and I got it. And so I think it'll continue to be interesting where a lot of these weekends, because generally in Formula One, there's almost an agreement among teammates. Whoever qualifies better gets the priority of the strategy. So they get the priority when they pit. You know, they're going to get the kind of default. If they got the better car, they'll get better in the race. So I think the rivalry between Piastri and Norris is really going to come down to the qualifying days throughout the year. It's like, hey, who qualifies better to get that starting grid ahead, you know, in the race?
Well, it's interesting. You know, they both, you know, Norris won the Australian Grand Prix and Piastri won the Chinese Grand Prix. But had he not, you know, spun out into the grass there during the Australian Grand Prix, that could have been a real interesting who would have got that victory, because they were really riding neck and neck then as one and two. I think Oscar ended up finishing, you know, seventh or eighth after he got out of the grass there. But yeah, I agree. I think Oscar's the better driver. I think he's the more aggressive. He's ready to go for it. Like Rome mentioned, you know, whether or not he had the, you know, the lap or the pace as they pit it to make a run, he wanted to try to make a run. Ultimately, they decided not to, and they took the points, and, you know, they got a good sizable lead right now in the Constructors' Cup. But, yeah, Verstappen, you know, the theme of the show has been built different. He just is, man. He just is. He's a heck of a racer. Say what you want. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, that's Jason's guy. But Verstappen, this is his fourth straight Japanese Grand Prix won. The guy's impressive, man. Say what you want about, I mean, we didn't even talk about the Red Bull car number two, again, struggling. Yuki did not have a good run, but Verstappen stepped up, got it done. Four straight Japanese Grand Prix wins.
Yeah, he'd have a good run, but Lawson did pretty well.
No, you didn't. Things.
No, not the end?
No, Lawson
17th. No, 17th. Not a good run.
No, the second Red Bull driver that was the best was Isaac Hadjer, who's driving the other. Yeah. Was Liam Lawson's teammate in the Racing Bulls car. He finished in eighth in that race. That was his kind of best finish in Formula One as a rookie, too. So, you know, a lot of criticism of him because he's the one who spun out at the Australian Grand Prix during the, like, the pre-race. During the formation lap. So, but, you know, he was pretty impressive in qualifying and yesterday, too, where that car is at. So he was the best of the kind of the junior Red Bull, you know, contingent with Lawson and Yuki and them. So yeah, Yuki wasn't all there with the car, but again, he was kind of thrown into the seat. I think he'll get a little more, you know, kind of time to prove himself. Lawson though, yeah, Lawson didn't look good in the Racing Bulls cars either. You know, that there was a lot of talk coming from him last year as he was not happy he wasn't in a seat when he was reserve driver, ended up taking Daniel Ricciardo's seat at the Racing Bulls, then got, you know, the promotion to the Red Bull seat, and kind of he was, you know, fairly confident in himself in what his skills would have been, got lost the ride two races in, and now performing even, you know, just as bad in the secondary Red Bull team. So a lot for him to prove going into the rest of the season.
I must have passed out earlier because I remember they were complimenting how well Lawson was driving with the Red Bulls racing. He was around 11 or 12 ahead of.
He was up there 11 or 12, and then I think he made the regular pit stop like everybody else.
He was ahead of Yuki, including Alonso. So I was kind of curious. I did look it up because I remember at some point during the telecast, they showed about like five or six drivers running on softs. This was like after the 25th lap mark. And it was saying Alonso, Stroll, Lawson, and Tsunoda were all ending the race with soft tires, at least a few of those. I can't remember like who were the other ones that started with softs. Like some people started with softs, some people ended. So, all right. Any other notes from the Japanese Grand Prix? Verstappen down 1 point, I think. And the driver's down with Ben.
He's down 1 point. McLaren, obviously, with a pretty sizable lead in the constructors. But Mercedes has kind of been the pleasant surprise. Number two in the constructors right now. Had good performance from George Russell and Kimi Antonelli, like talked about. Broadcast made a big deal about Kimi Antonelli. He led a good, I don't know, 10 laps in the middle of the race where he didn't pit. And he was riding the medium tires. And so I think at some point you're going to see this kid jump onto a podium here in the next month or so. I think that the Mercedes has pace and keeps up with it in certain races. I'll be interested to see what kind of track, you know, he'd be looking for. You go to Bahrain next, where they did preseason testing. Is that a track where, you know, Kimi's got a little bit of an experience with? See what the cars are at. A little bit of a different course. But the one thing I will say, the circuits, which Bahrain will be, as we get into the road or the street courses, I'm a little more interested in that from the passing and stuff perspective, because a lot of those street courses, you get some long stretches. Saudi Arabia has some, Vegas has them, Singapore. There's like big long stretches for passing where a lot of these like circuits, like in Suzuka and Japan and, China a little bit, but it wasn't as bad because it's a little flat open. But some of these street courses get some little more passing. So I'll be curious in some of the setups as we get longer in the season and how many more of these races like Japan and circuits are like, hey, it's a qualifying really race and we're just running the race out with minimal passing. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's Sunday at 8 a.m. it looks like. So good time again. Wake up. Get a little jog in and be ready to rock and roll. A little is F1 it, on Sunday morning.
It's this Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Quick
no, turnaround. It's next Sunday.
It's the 13th.
Yeah. This Sunday. All right. What time is it for us?
8 a.m. our time.
Yeah, why not? I think I have the day off. Let's do it.
I mean, Rome, you might still just be up. You might be crashing back at your pad at 6:30 a.m. anyway. So it might be,
This doesn't feel like one of those party weekends for me. I'm a little tired. I need some.
You look a little tired right now, Rome. You look a little tired.
Feeling pretty good. All right, feeling good right now. It was nice sleeping in at the hotel. Only driving 2.5 hours to LA and then 6 nap up. All right. So let's just transition. First, let's talk hockey, and then we'll talk NBA because it's pretty exciting right now. I don't know if you've seen the standings, but there's, I think, 5 teams or 6 teams with the same record in the Western Conference. It is pretty wild. I can't remember the last time that's happened, but let's talk hockey first. Ovechkin breaks Wayne Gretzky's goal-scoring record in the same amount of games that Wayne Gretzky got his record, which is pretty crazy. It's pretty impressive. They made a pretty big deal. I guess he had a chance to compete in the game prior. There was no goalie in the net, but he didn't want to score and break the record that way. He wanted to do it with defenders and the whole nine yards. And much love, you know, much props to him for wanting to do that. So he gets it against, was it the Rangers, I believe?
Islanders.
And Gretzky was there, big celebration, fanfare. Jason, I want you to answer first. What are your thoughts on Ovechkin's becoming the new guy on Mount Rushmore for goals?
Yeah, I think we talked about this like a month or so ago. It was one of those records growing up where, hey, this is going to be an unbeatable record. No one's going to get close. And it kind of felt like that when you look at, I mean, I think I did the stats or something like Sidney Crosby's like two 100 goals or something besides behind Ovechkin or something like that, where he's his like modern contemporary and like the rival that these guys were kind of like built on and everything. Yeah. And it just was a record that you didn't see. Like Gordie Howe, who held the previous record, like Gordie Howe's like one of the few players that I think scored a goal in like four different decades. Like he scored an NHL goal in like when he was like 51 or 52 or something like that. It's just absurd. If you ask my cousin and my uncle, Gordie Howe is the greatest hockey player ever. Don't ever try to tell them different. They're a bunch of Red Wings homers. But oh yeah, Rome's a Red Wings homer. I forgot about that. So you're not? I thought you were.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Oh, okay, you are. Whatever.
I think you just like that Detroit style pizza, but yeah.
Yeah.
It helps. And it helps that my favorite pizza is Little Caesars.
Yeah, so I mean, you think just the unbreakable nature of this goal, Gordie Howe, how long he played, how great he was. Somebody like Jaromir Jagr, who's number four all time, he was playing until
like 48, right? Yeah,
yeah. I think he's still playing in Europe right now. He's like 53 or something like that. Yeah. So I mean, these guys are playing forever. And when you looked at kind of like where Ovechkin was sitting, you know, he hit 800 goals, so around Gordie Howe back in like the 22-23 season. So, you know, how many goals he needed to score between now and then, like basically like almost like 100 goals. And then this year he puts up like, I don't know, what is he at? 49 goals right now, Rome, I think it's
42.
Like that.
42, I'm looking at right now.
42 goals this season. I mean, at his age, you don't think of that, you know, that type of production as a goal scorer. So just how prolific he has been as a goal scorer throughout his career, finally got that Stanley Cup championship, you know, at a certain point to really cement his legacy. Because as he was compared to Crosby, kind of his contemporary, as they were both number one overall picks, and one, you know, Ovechkin during kind of that lockout year, they basically started kind of the same time. Crosby got the Stanley Cups and was getting all the kind of the praise with kind of the Penguins dynasty there in the 2010s. But Ovechkin getting the cup and now just the individual accolades, like it puts it on a level that you assume no one's going to be like Ovechkin to be able to break this record too, because it's not just, you know, being great as a goal scorer, but the longevity that which you need to do it. Like me thinking of, you know, turn this into a homer for self, the Blackhawks, you know, I had Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves won 3 Stanley Cups. Like, these guys, like, just, you know, as they got older, naturally, as we all do, like all of a sudden the production just kind of falls off, where Ovechkin, you know, has still been able to have just a killer shot from the top of the circle, you know, almost an unbeatable slap shot at certain points, and just always finding ways to score goals. Like it's super impressive. Awesome from Gretzky kind of being there for him. I know he said that Gordie Howe was there when he was passing it, and he said he would do the same if anyone passed his record. So it was a cool moment. It was all trending on social media and everything. So I think did he get free beer or got a beer named after him or something like that too? I forgot. I was going on that. I thought it was like some zero calorie, like Budweiser or something. He's got something like that. You know, think about Vetchkin, man. He's still pounding the beers. He at peak physical form in the hockey rink.
39 you know? Years old, 42 goals this year, as we mentioned, 31 he had last year. You know, me and Rome saw him in person about a month ago. And like you said, Jason, I mean, the guy knows how to, you know, he didn't look like he was on the ice for 17 minutes because he knows how to
pick the spots really nice.
But he knows how to conserve his energy. He knows how to attack. And he's really quick, strong, and physical once he does get the puck. I mean, every time he got the puck, I mean, the Ducks had two or three guys on him all the time. I think he had like 3 assists in that game.
3 assists, but like a lot of shots on goal. Like, they were there.
But just, you know, the attention he gets. And then Rome, like you said, I mean, he had the chance the night before, empty net, said, no, I don't want to break it like that. Gets the power play goal against the Islanders. You guys mentioned he does have 1 Stanley Cup. They've got the best record right now in the East. They're probably the favorites to come out of the East right now, maybe get back to the finals. If he can win another Stanley Cup, that'd be 2, given the record. I mean, he's already a Hall of Famer, but just to cement a great legacy in a career, another Stanley Cup would go a long ways for that.
Yeah. I like Ovechkin. I got to be honest. I'm a big Pittsburgh Penguins guy as well. So Sidney Crosby, I followed his career from the beginning. I like him more than Ovechkin. That's just, you know, that's just my guy. I think Crosby's more relatable to Gretzky. I think they kind of, you know, at least he's always looking for like the assist, you know, trying to make the right play. And I think total points, I think Crosby still has more points, hell of a lot more assists. It might be double than what Ovechkin has. I didn't get a chance to check, but just want to point out, I just want to give some love to Crosby because everyone's glossed him over. He's been injured a lot in his career. Feels like he's missed like 5 or 6 years and on and off, on and off. Like half the games he plays is like just getting back in shape because he's had some pretty serious stuff. But I want people to recognize Ovechkin, Flowers, but Crosby's pretty great too. Like if he wasn't injured, he'd be a little higher on that goal list. But props to Ovechkin. The guy's a tank, dude. I didn't realize how big he was until we saw him in person. I was impressed.
And the way he moves. He moves quick too, man. Just glides through the ice.
I don't ice skate a lot. I'm okay. And people are always impressed as I go ice skating. Like, oh, shit, you know how to ice skate? Like, I'm sore, dude. My groin can't move for like 3 weeks afterwards. Like, it's a tough sport, man. It just works everything. And falling on the ice is no easy task. Like, I don't know what the pads feel like or like how the movement is. Like, it already feels like you're just like kind of limited on skates. So it's a really impressive sport. A lot of people talking about like what's more impressive, LeBron doing what he's doing now or Ovechkin, you know. Ovechkin now has a goal record. LeBron has a scoring record. Say what you will. I don't know. But it's kind of crazy that we're all living to kind of see these like records that we thought would never be passed being passed up right now. It's wild.
Yeah. Not to disagree or anything like as far as the comparison comp, you talked about Crosby and stuff like, yeah, but you look at like most points in a career as much as, you know, Gretzky's, you know, 800 and, you know, 90 something goals. Gretzky's got 2,857 points in his career.
So yeah.
Like, that might be the most unbroken record because not only guys is a prolific goal scorer, like the amount of assists that Gretzky got there too. So yeah, I mean, different times and different eras and stuff, you know, it's a big deal. If we can get hockey on First Take, get Stephen A talking about, you know, we get somehow.
Stephen A talking hockey.
That's what he said. We had to get LeBron into the argument. So it was LeBron versus Ovechkin. I think it was what the argument was. So got to make sure.
Let me guess. Yeah. He took Ovechkin. Let me guess.
I have no idea. I didn't listen to it. I just saw the thing. I'm assuming they said LeBron because nobody watched hockey.
They had that guy that commented on the All-Star game earlier. Like they brought him back on. What's his name? That black guy, the hockey player.
PK Subban.
Yeah.
He's really opinionated. So he brings a lot of tension and debate on that show whenever they bring him on.
PK brings good energy.
Yeah, PK is good.
Yeah, he has some pretty strong comments. I caught a clip of it, but he has some pretty strong comments on it. Obviously, he's going for Ovechkin. When do the playoffs start for NHL? Probably pretty soon, right?
Yeah, generally, I mean, what do we got down here, too? We got...
It's like the NBA season. I don't like how they just run parallel to each other.
They always have. You got most teams got about five or four games left.
Yeah, that's the same.
You got,
it's the same.
82 games. Yeah. It's just so
82
weird.
Games. Yeah, they generally repair. Hockey generally starts like a week or two before basketball. But then they generally line up in the playoffs at the exact same time. So, yeah, getting down to it, where things are at, some shuffling as we get kind of into the end of the playoffs. You only got a couple teams eliminated out of the East. Several teams, like the West, is pretty much taking shape at this point with five or six teams already out, and you got five teams clinched. So, it'll be interesting. I think, we'll probably do some more previewing as we kind of go, but like the Jets have been fairly dominant in the West all year. The Capitals have been, you know, as we were talking through with Ovechkin, I think there'll be maybe a little bit of jockeying here on these final couple of games. It was interesting. I don't know if Rome, you brought it up with Ovechkin breaking that in New York at the Islanders, like, and not trying to do anything goofy to make sure this was at home or anything like that, because the Capitals are playing for something because they're 3 points behind the Jets for the President's Trophy to give them basically home ice in the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, they've clinched all through the East, have the Capitals up, but you know, they have one less game played so far than the Jets, so they have an opportunity right now if they keep winning to get the President's Trophy. So I think there is something for them to play for here down the stretch.
That's tough. So you got the Jets and the Stars ahead of them, the win column. Red Wings kind of had a little rough patch.
Look like they're 6 points back right now. So
yeah,
with six to play.
Tough. That's tough. All right. Let's talk a little NBA basketball. First, the recap. Lakers looked pretty. I think we already had the podcast last time. They looked pretty iffy against Golden State. Aaron was jerking that game off pretty extensively. Pretty happy about the outcome. Not a big deal. The Lakers.
So that's
put on a clinic.
No.
On the Thunder.
Not a big deal. Next.
They put a clinic on the Thunder. Looked dominant. And, you know, just like that's what Luka does. He ignites the offense. Austin Reeves. Looking like a potential 25-point, 30-point guy in the NBA, going on a tear himself, which is pretty crazy when you consider that the Lakers, they have Austin Reeves running the offense.
And undrafted. That's what LeBron undrafted player.
Chosen to be undrafted. He could have been drafted in the second round, but there's a cool story behind it. Yeah, you have to listen to it. They orchestrated it where like they felt like LA
it's
was
honestly
one of the best
better
chances.
Not to get drafted late it in the is. Second round.
After I heard a story, I'm like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. Because then you can kind of try to pick and choose like the best
spot. You can join a camp of a team that could use their spot. Yeah.
Smart move. I think he said he was going to end up in Charlotte if he would have got drafted, which that's dead man zone for a lot of players.
Would have been dead man zone for Austin Reeves, that's for sure.
Possibly. But it's kind of crazy, though. Even Luka is deferring to Austin Reeves running the offense. Nonetheless, you know, they play again tomorrow night. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it'll be revenge from the Thunder.
Aren't playing for anything, man. But I mean, I didn't see the game, so I can't comment on it.
Yeah, I know you didn't see the game because they play their ass off. They got worked, dude. It was a fun game. It was actually really cool.
So Rome only sees Laker games when they win.
That's
Aaron relevant. Aaron only sees Laker games when they lose. And so just whatever dynamic is in the day.
I have a feeling like Aaron has like an alarm clock. He's like, oh, Lakers are down by 10. Time to put on the TV.
I didn't even know the Lakers were playing the Thunder. I was watching Rockets Warriors, and they were talking about the game, and they were. Oh. Well, I guess the big thing I heard was SGA, no free throws.
Yeah, the free throw merchant denied for the first time,
because the Warriors were complaining about it.
Is that a real nickname?
Yeah, they call him the free throw merchant because they think the refs just give him free throws.
Yes, yeah.
It's a big knock on SGA right now.
Yeah. So, no free throws. LeBron also had no free throws in that game.
He's also not doing a
lot
of things.
But the Warriors broadcast was talking about on NBA TV because they're like, SGA, zero free throws, and somehow Draymond Green's got five fouls early in the third quarter. Like, what's wrong with the NBA officiating? And I've been asking the same thing for, you know, 25 years, maybe 30 years.
Sounds like it's finally being corrected, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the Lakers are a good matchup for the Thunder. They match up well against them. So we'll see. I mean, Luka had his way with Dort last year in the playoffs. I heard he had his way again with him. So Dort's not the answer. He's not the Luka stopper. That's for sure. But I think, I mean, in the West, we're going to get into it. But if you're the Lakers, I think they're one of the teams with the Thunder, but the Rockets, Warriors, and T-Wolves, those are the three teams I'm most worried about if I'm a Lakers and a Thunder fan. I don't want to see either one of those three teams. The Rockets look really good. Shutting down Steph Curry for, 3 points? I mean, after he dropped 37 on the number one ranked Lakers defense, which is a joke, by the way. But
this guy,
you know, I mean, me and Jason, I don't know why we haven't talked about it, but the Bulls are red hot again.
Get out of here.
I mean, they just swept the Lakers. They just swept the Lakers in the last month, and I think Rome wants to dismiss that. The Lakers want nothing of the Bulls in the NBA Finals. I'll tell you that right now. They do not want to see them in the Finals.
They went out just, you know, taking out the Lakers, and then, you know, Rome was poo-pooing them because they just, they did all they needed to do. They had to play, you know, where they play the Thunder and a couple other teams, you know. Then they get right back on it, win 3 straight, 7-3, hop the Heat in the East. They're sitting a game behind the Hawks right now, man. The Bulls are in it, man.
Bulls are in it. Makes a lot of sense. Billy Donovan, the king of Florida. He led him to their only ever Final Fours, 2 national titles. Florida wins a national title. Billy Donovan's feeling that Gator vibe. He's got the Bulls chomping at the bit for the playoffs. Bulls are going to win that play-in and get in. I'm guaranteeing it now. They're getting in.
Yeah, Bulls, guys, They're 36-43.
That's better than 23-38, whatever they were a while back.
They're tied.
Listen, it's not very long ago that Miami Heat were playing in a play-in game.
You know what?
Went all the way to the NBA Finals, man.
Bulls have a chance to inch up and into the eighth seed, actually. They're just a half game out. They're 7-3. Hawks on a little bit of a stumble themselves. I like the Bulls' chance to sneak into that eighth spot.
I'll tell you this. I know Aaron and I are putting on a little bit of a show here. But besides the Cavaliers and the Celtics, there's no one else in the East that if I'm the Bulls, I'm scared of. I think they could beat the Knicks. I think they could beat the Bucks.
I don't think they could beat the Pistons.
Well, they're not going to play them right away. But Jason, the Knicks, have the Knicks ever beaten the Bulls in the playoffs? The answer is
no.
Come on. I'm not in the Bucks. I mean, half the team's either suspended, taking steroids, or got blood clots. So, no, I'm not worried about them either.
Hey, if the Bulls play the Knicks.
Who's suspended on the Bucks?
Portis. Bobby Portis. I think he's due back, but yeah.
If the Bulls play the Knicks, how do I get Bob Costas and Marv Albert on the broadcast? can they move it to NBC 6 months earlier? Give me that game on NBC right now. All right, I need John Tesh and Roundball Rock flowing. I need Bob Costas giving me an essay on. You know, he'll probably do some Trump essay
and transition in the studio. Give me a Ahmad Rashad.
I need that in my life right now.
You guys are more pumped up for the play-in than anyone else I know. We need like a play-in segment now.
Hey, I'm going to go find my Bulls jersey that's buried deep in the closet that I haven't been able to wear in like 15 years.
Agree.
And bring that out, all right?
Agree, man. I'm going to wash it, shine it up, get it on. I'm ready to rock and roll, man.
It's 90 degrees out here, Rome. Sun's out, guns
is
out
it?
Right now.
Yeah.
Dude, it was so nice.
This ain't Ventura where it's like 68 and overcast and partly cloudy. Right here, man, it's 84, 85 and sunny, man.
Dude, I was freezing my ass when I got back to San Francisco today. It was cold.
It looked windy at the ballpark when I was watching that baseball game.
Really?
Looked,
oh, this game right? Gosh.
It's over now.
Yeah.
But it was a good game.
You don't want to be in that ballpark when it's cold. It's like hard to enjoy yourself.
Nah. That's remember we went to that football game, whatever, like 20 years ago. We froze our ass off there. That was in December, too.
It gets worse. All right. Anyways, back to the Western Conference is what we started off with. That was like a hell of a tangent there. You have so the best possible
when it's our team, it's a tangent. But if we're talking about the Lakers, it's like half the
we're talking
half
about the
show.
Conference here.
Okay, now
we're on the conference.
Okay, you've been at the conference. All right. So we only have 4 games to go for most teams. Rockets, they can either be the second or the third seed. Same thing with the Lakers; they still have a chance.
The Rockets are guaranteed too. They're not dropping behind the Lakers.
But mathematically, I'm just breaking it down for you. But the Lakers, though,
pin it down too.
They saw mathematically they can drop down to the eighth seed. That's the lowest that they can drop. Everybody else from 8 to 3,
so Rome,
they have a chance of being there.
So Rome, what you're telling me is your Lakers are so great they might still end up in the same seed as the Chicago Bulls.
That's what you're telling me right now.
That they might end up as the same seed as the Chicago Bulls.
They're not dropping that many
games. I'm just
saying,
you said they could go to 8. You're saying the Bulls could get to 8. I'm just saying.
The Grizzlies could be number 3. The Grizzlies.
Yeah, they could.
Could also be number 3. Yeah, so you have underneath the Lakers, Nuggets, Clippers, Warriors, Timberwolves, Grizzlies, all with the same record. Nuggets are just half a game up in the win column, but that is anything can happen in 4 games. That is like the craziest, tightest grid I've ever seen.
When's Jamal Murray coming back for the Nuggets? He's been out for a minute. What's he got? A knee injury? Hamstring?
Don't know, but it sounds like Nuggets fans are slowly starting to turn on Russell Westbrook. Not a big fan of that foul that costed Joker.
Not only that, he had the layup that he missed too.
Yeah. So
he lost in that game. They haven't won since. Have not won since that moment.
They lost 4 games now. And it's not like Lakers are playing lights out there. They're 500 ball. Clippers have been pretty good.
Clippers, man. I mean, say what we want about the Clippers. If they're healthy, they're always competitive and good. That's just the real question. Load management. Who's going to show up and play every night?
I don't like them, but it's impressive that they're.
I saw them in person. They got a pretty good squad.
Yeah.
Your boy Bill Simmons was there. That's all you could talk about. Not how I was there, but whatever, dude. I don't want to get into it.
You don't want to get into it?
I'm still emotionally hurt from it.
Are you?
Yeah. And then you took it. Then you and my dad are taking jabs at me when I'm not there. So, I mean, I might have to go to therapy this weekend. I'm just saying.
Brother,
like paradise, you know, I might need a therapy session. I'm going to call her up.
If this is what gets you in therapy, it's been a long time coming.
If Aaron calls up the therapist in paradise, he ain't calling for therapy.
That's true. A different kind of therapy.
I haven't seen paradise yet.
Hey, I'll say this. I'll definitely have the blue shoes on me because I'll be ready to go.
That's where it's coming from.
Jason knows what's up there.
All right. Going down the stretch, 1 week left. Any bold predictions with how the West ends, the order? Because we're not going to talk NBA until the season's over.
Or are we going on Thursday?
Yeah, but
okay.
You know, nothing's crazy to be happening.
I mean, yeah. I think the Lakers are going to get the 3 seed.
Yeah. Okay.
Outside of that,
You think the Nuggets drop?
I hope the Nuggets hold on to the 4.
Well, let me see what their schedule looks like. I mean,
they dropped 4 straight right
they
now.
They got Kings, but... Grizzlies, Rockets.
Ugh.
Followed by... Yeah.
This is a rare stretch, so they've lost 4 in a row, 3-7 in their last 10.
I mean, granted, the Rockets probably won't have nothing to play for that last game. And the Kings really... they don't have anything really to play for either, right? Because they're locked in as the 9. Well, I guess they need to win because they don't want to get to 10. They want to host Dallas. So, yeah, Memphis and the Kings are 2 tough games for them. So the Rockets, I don't think, have anything to play for unless the Rockets just want to be dicks and knock them into the play-in. But, yeah.
Besides, I think, jockeying for the seat, I feel like no one's really talking about the Phoenix Suns, or it's just I'm not paying attention right now.
Durant's out. It's about to be the summer of Durant again.
I mean, just lost 6 straight. Like, I mean, they're allowing the Mavericks to get in after the disaster that their last 2 months have been. Just crazy to me for what that team is supposed to be.
Yeah, it's been like a hack job, I think, from their coach.
Management and ownership's been terrible there, man. The expectations there, ever since they got to the finals, what was that, in 2021? I mean, they messed with it too much. Yeah, I mean, they extended Chris Paul when he was kind of like past his prime, gave him a 3-year deal. They got rid of I can't think of the big guy's name. They traded him to Portland, the 7-footer.
Yeah.
They went all in on Durant, Booker, Beal. Like, it just hasn't
getting
worked.
Beal is stupid.
They got to move all 3. I would start over. Like, this is what I would do. They won't do it. No team would be dumb enough to do it. But I would call up DC and say, look, we'll give you Durant, we'll give you Beal, we'll give you Booker, give us Cooper Flagg, and let's just start over.
Beal go back to DC.
I don't think they want Beal back.
Yeah. They're the ones that gave him that stupid contract. Here, have him back.
I don't think any way they can do it. I don't even think they have the salaries to match it because the NBA's got all these goofy rules for trading and stuff. So they'd have to have, like, you know what? That'd be like $100 million in expiring contracts, which no team has or anything like that. So it's a mess. I would assume they've been long rumored. I'd assume the Miami Heat at some point with Durant is going to be trying to show some interest there. Now, whether they have to sucker them into taking something else from a contract perspective, but that's long been that Durant to Miami's always kind of been a thing, but I think it's probably 5 years too late now.
Yeah, I've heard the Knicks mentioned as well, depending if they go first round exit against mine and Jason's Bulls. So yeah, it's a possibility.
You were supposed to go to the Knicks like 5 years ago anyway. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Heat make a lot of sense. Durant's played his last days. I don't even know if he's going to come back. I think he's supposed to be clear to come back from that ankle injury and play for the Suns. But given that he's going to want out, Phoenix has got to ask for a lot less. I mean, what do they want? 3 first round picks for Durant? It's like, come on, guys. Like, the guy's still a great player, but Take your two first round picks and give me a good medium salary guy back and let's go.
Even that, you know, just give him one first round pick. That's what the Lakers did for Luka.
But they also gave him AD. It's a shame, really. And Kyrie not getting hurt in AD. I mean, Dallas would have been a serious player in this thing, too. I mean, let's not overlook that. I mean, it's amazing, given all the injuries they got back into 10.
Yeah, they would probably be in the mix. I talked about Portland.
Portland's schedule down the stretch of the year was just brutally tough. They're about ready to pass Phoenix, but yeah, tough.
Yeah. Okay. And East is pretty much locked in. I don't think nothing else is going to change there. Bulls can possibly get to 8. Do you think they do it?
I don't know. Just, I mean, they're...
Your 10-seeded Bulls moving up the rankings, playing better without LaVine. Who'd have figured?
Yeah, I mean...
We got the Cavs tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then the Heat, Wizards, Sixers. So they should win. Yeah, they should win maybe 3 out of these final 4.
Cavs have been playing like 500 ball since they're like their last little 15-game winning streak.
Well, the Cavs don't need to win. I mean, I guess they could win if they think the Lakers can beat the Thunder and they think they could get the best record in the NBA, but that's a tall order right now. I don't know if they want to pursue that or not. I don't know what the tiebreaker is either with OKC.
Don't know. That's really tough.
I'm going to say the Bulls stay at 9.
Okay. Hawks Magic, any movement there? That's pretty much like locked in those two. I like the East. Like, it's pretty easy. Everybody's grouped in twos.
Yeah, you're the game. So, Aaron, how does the play-in work? Is it a 7-8 and 9-10?
Yeah.
7 plays 10, 8 plays 9.
I think 7 okay. plays 8 and 9 plays 10. And then whoever wins that 7-8 game gets the 7th seed, and then whoever wins the 9-10 plays the loser of the 7-8 for the spot for the 8th. I think that's how it works.
Because it's multiple games, right?
Yeah.
Because
if you're 7-8, you can lose one game, and then you get another game.
Yeah, 7 plays the 8. The winner automatically gets the 7th seed.
Yes. And the loser plays the winner of the 9-10 game.
That's tough.
So, obviously, I'd like for the Bulls to get to number 8, so at least they could afford to lose a game. But we'll see. I think Atlanta has a tiebreaker over the Bulls, too. Atlanta's owned the Bulls, I believe, this year. They've been pretty good against them.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Yeah, everyone else is locked in. Cavs 1, Celtics 2, Knicks 3, Pacers 4, Bucks 5. None of that's going to change. Actually, technically, Pistons could move up to the 5th.
Well, Pistons lost against... your Sacramento Kings earlier today.
Tough loss.
And they've kind of struggled a little bit down the stretch here, too.
Yeah, they've been playing 500 ball as well. So they have a chance. Do they get the 5th seed or no?
Bucks?
Yeah. No. Pistons? Yeah.
I'm going to go stay at 6. I think 6 is better. I think if I'm the Pistons, I'd rather play the Knicks.
Yeah, it's a better matchup.
The Pacers are going to beat the Bucks again.
Pacers are kind of a weird team, man.
Honestly,
like,
if the
really
Pacers
good or really bad.
I'll say this: if it is Cavs Pacers round 2, that's gonna be a really, really good second round matchup.
Yeah.
And the Knicks, I just don't trust. Boston owns them. I don't know if they can even give them a series. We'll see.
All right. Final thoughts on the world of sports.
I don't know. I mean, the NFL draft is creeping upon us here too, so we got that coming up, and then there's some baseball there.
Yeah,
did you guys see Tiger Woods' tweet on April Fool's Day?
Yeah, I did. He was talking about it on the radio about how he's going to play in the Masters.
He said he's going to play in the Masters, and people bought it, man.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Great.
Oh yeah, Dan Patrick was laughing his ass off.
He
on
just
it.
Said Jason, he just tore his ACL or whatever it was.
Achilles.
Oh, no, he said his Achilles. It wasn't as bad as they initially thought. Doctors cleared him for the Masters. Jason Whitlock particularly bought it hook, line, and sinker. It was great.
These guys are fucking stupid.
Yeah, I think he said like Jason mentioned, then he was doing like the whole, you know, chamber sleeping and everything, and that he's going to be able to walk in the whole 9. And then like 5 minutes later, I think he's like, nah, just fucking be off.
That's crazy. Jesus, Dodgers have lost 3 of the last 4.
Rome, I never lie to you on the show, man.
Despite you're full of shit,
dad,
but
despite what you and my dad might say behind the scenes.
That's going to be fun.
You did say, I guess, World of Sport. Jay's given Vladdy Jr. 14 years, 500 mil.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people say that's too much for a potential DH guy that's going to be going to the DH pretty soon. 14 years is a lot. I don't know what's up with the baseball contracts. I still don't get it. Like, they still keep on doing these long-term.
You blame Scott Boras.
I think if you don't, these guys leave.
But
that's
why?
The problem. Like, just... Because, I mean,
when has it ever panned out besides, like, Alex Rodriguez might be the only one that's, like, done well, even at the end of that contract?
It doesn't pan out.
I would say it depends. How old's Vlad, do you know?
26, I believe. I believe he's 26.
Yeah, I would say that's on the cusp of where you want, like, if you were to give that type of thing. I made this argument for Bryce Harper to the White Sox and Machado at the time. When they hit free agency, if they're doing it in like their 25, 26, 27, where you're getting them for their late 20s and early 30s, which is really like the baseball player's prime, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
But if you're hitting free agency at 30, then it's not worth it.
Well, that's what the Angels did with Pujols. Remember, I think they signed him when he was like 31.
Yeah.
To a 10-year deal.
Was he 31?
He was in his 30s.
Allegedly. He was probably really 37, but, I mean, they said he was 31.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, Harper signed, a 13-year deal at, age 26, 27, like you said there, Jason, with the Phillies?
Harper was good, though.
He was, but to me, that was always my argument, is, like, those are the players.
That's your argument,
I would never pay the hitter, like, some of these guys got, but if you can get them in their mid to late 20s, right in that 26, 27-year-old era, and give them a 13, 14-year deal, that you're paying them through 40. You're getting 6 to 7 years of true baseball player prime, and then, 37 through 40, you're not getting as much. I get that, but those are the only realistic options, and it's hitters only. Like, pitchers, I think the Dodgers got it right on the way they kind of do pitchers. They'll just do, like, a 2-1 or something.
They're
or 1-1. Well, to me, that's the competitive edge of the Dodgers. They'll play just an insane amount of money for a 2-year deal. Because, there's a lot of money here for the 1 year, and then we'll give you a second year after that. But we're not giving you a 10-year deal for a friggin' pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, most pitchers, I think, probably get 4 to 6 year deals. I think Blake Snell, what did he get, a 4-year, $180 million? Maybe it was 5 years, whatever it was. I mean, they'll give some pitchers, but even Corbin Burns, who came over for him, the American League, he got a 6-year, $200 million deal.
Well, the Snell was like a weird one because they don't give those contracts. And I was like, what? They're getting Snell and they're giving a contract? It's like, what the hell?
Well, they can because they've, they deferred all that money. So now, I mean, even the Japanese pitcher, he got a $300 million deal, right? Yokomoto or whatever. So they got a bargain on the new young Jap pitcher they got because he's not even part of that the pool yet. So they basically got him on a signing bonus of like $6.5-7 million.
Initially, I thought 14 years for $500 million. I think that's like a deal. I thought, if anything, Vlad probably should have got more, or he could have asked more for more. But then, is he really a defensive guy?
He's a first baseman currently, right?
Yeah, and he's basically just a hitter, though.
Yeah, I mean,
First base is what you pay for. I don't need a gold glover at first base. Like, are you serviceable at first base? Like, could you be a big time hitter? It's a lot of things. Like, I mean, I don't want to bring fantasy into this, but like Luis Arraez, who plays for the Padres now, he's like prolific batting champion. But I got this guy playing first base right now, and okay, great, you could hit 350, but you got no power and you're not driving in runs, you're just getting on base. But at first base, hey, you want to waste that? I need a big dude, a big bopper that's going to get home runs and RBIs, and then where can you hide him, whether it's first base or the designated hitter? I mean, you need some of these guys like that. And for a franchise like Toronto, when you play New York and you play Boston and now Baltimore, while they haven't paid money, they got just a young gun kind of, stacked amount there. Toronto's got to like put something out that makes you want to come to the ballpark. And as you need to pay some of these stars.
Yeah, they missed out on everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, they got Anthony Santander, which isn't small. I know, I mean, he had a ton of home runs for the Orioles last year. But, I mean, you need a star face of the franchise. And out of all the second generation guys the Blue Jays had, where they just drafted everyone's son. You know, they had Calvin Biggio and Bo Bichette and Vladdy Jr. here. Yeah, man, they had the squad of second generation guys, but Vladdy's been the one that has, you know, mostly panned out that you want on the team. And hey, you need a star face of the franchise.
So I'm mistaken, man. I did not know that he won a Gold Glove. That was a couple years ago.
I mean, Gold Gloves.
He played third base when he first came up, so he's athletic, and having him at first, you know, just prolongs it a little more. So
yeah,
and he can hit. I mean, he comes from good genes. Obviously, his father played forever, was a hitter, could hit pretty well. Finished his career out with the Angels right there in DH. So I mean, I'm not a fan of giving guys 14 years all this money, but at the same time, that's what you got to pay. Or what you start doing now. What teams are starting to do, the Braves kind of started. Now you're seeing the Padres and even the Red Sox. When these guys are 20, 21, just give them a 10-year deal now, because they're not making any money. Instead of waiting 4 or 5 years, how baseball set up and team control, just go like, hey, dude, I'm going to give you $160 million right now for 9 years, and these dudes sign it. And it's a bargain. I mean, Jackson Merrill is the best player on the Padres right now. Should have won NL Rookie of the Year. I mean, if he was to hit free agency in 2 or 3 years, his value would be worth $300 million. They basically got him for, what, $175, whatever it was. So a lot of these teams, yeah. Braves with Ronald Acuna, like 2 or 3 years ago before all ACL injuries, signed him 8-year, $100 million, same with Michael Harris. Red Sox just signed that Campbell guy. He played 4 games in the majors, what, he got a 9-year deal? So yeah. That's smarter business.
It's a smarter move because you lock them up during their prime. But I'll say on the flip side, the White Sox did that for a bunch of guys who are now no longer with the team. So yeah, they signed Eloy Jimenez and Yoan Moncada and Tim Anderson and all these guys to those deals, and they didn't pan out. And, you know, is what it is right now. But I do agree with Aaron, because they posted that graphic with Acuña and Riley and Ozzy Albies and all those guys that, hey, you basically, instead of them toiling through arbitration and all this random crap, hey, we bought off some years, paid them a little more money in the next like 3-4 years, but you made years 7 and 8 significantly cheaper, where they're going to demand higher in arbitration. So baseball's got the goofiest like salary structure ever. I think you need to play a lot of MLB The Show to really understand and how it works. But yeah, I think I agree with Aaron. I like the way the Braves and the Padres, to agree, have done this.
Or you could just be the Dodgers and have a printer at your fucking yard and just print up money as the days go by. That's all.
True. Yeah. Dodgers do a lot of things.
They got that gun that shoots out. It doesn't shoot out T-shirts. It shoots out money. And the fans are just grabbing at it.
Don't hate deferred the Dodgers because they're deferred the money. Best at scouting. They're the best at developing talent. They're the best at managing their money.
It's all right. The tariffs are going to hit them for all the import money right here.
Exactly. So. 34% tax on Ohtani now? Yeah.
That'd be really funny if actually applied to like talent, dude. That'd be really fucking hilarious.
That would be.
Not really, but pretty funny. All right. Funny guy here doing tariff jokes at the end of every pod.
There you go.
That means it's time to go.